My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no waves on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Well, as I was telling you, the end of the year for a teacher is kind of nuts. Like, we have finals are next week, so this week's a lot of getting stuff in motion, especially for me, where I got to print like a bunch of different program brochures, and we're hosting Badminton State at my high school, so Barbcast is doing a big streaming thing and presentations, and we kind of I have to go all out because it's a media thing, and I have to show off just how fucking awesome me and my program are, so it's got to be the best thing in the world.
So because you're in charge of the, like, the broadcasting of the sports and everything that happens at the school, right?
Mm-hmm. Not just the broadcasting, but like the show. Like, we actually bought a thing. My AD did this because he's a crazy person. We have a thing that if you hold up your phone, right, we have some kind of a program now. I'm not 100% sure how this even works, but it literally takes over your phone and, like, it starts flashing and it goes in the rhythm of music, right? So everyone brings up their phone and we have a QR code you zoom in, and then at the beginning of the song, it's all just gonna flash. So we're creating, like, for the girls' Badminton State finals, we're creating this thing with a paparazzi, like paparazzi lights, essentially just go all over our big field house, right? And then we're gonna have I told you before, we have this projector that, like, laser projects stuff onto the floor. So we're gonna have, like, all this stuff going, that we've got a highlight video that we do. So we're really going, like, all out for this girls' badminton tournament to show everybody why my little socioeconomically impoverished high school is just one of the best video production facilities in the country.
Right, because you guys are doing, like, stuff that's, like, kind of way outside of the realm of what is typically possible for a school your size, right?
Yeah, 100%. Well, our school is actually decently sized, but yeah, we are, like, the guys from Huddle TV, like, use us as an example of what high schools should be, what could be able to do if you know what you're doing and if you're pushing. So, like, I'm not humble bragging, but we have literally in the last 3 years become one of the best video production high schools in a public high school in the country, and I'm really proud of that.
Did I ever tell you that I was on the media team when I was in high school?
No, like, you never did.
Yeah. Well, so when I left California, I was mostly focused on sports. I played football and I wrestled and all that stuff, but I hurt my shoulder real bad playing football. And we ended up moving to Missouri, and they didn't have a wrestling team, and I was kind of done with football. So I got into the media team. So I was on the media team, and I was in theater.
That's cool.
And so, yeah, I did. So I did, like, the daily news and all that stuff. And then at one point, I convinced my teacher just to let me have the camera, and for me to get my friends, and we would just go around and we would just shoot videos for a while. So, like, we did the news broadcast, and after that, it was like fuck off time. So Jackass was really popular.
Oh God.
So yeah. So I would just get videos of my friends just doing dumb shit. Like I pushed one guy down a hill in a shopping cart and he crashed into a ditch, like just doing all kinds of stuff. I'm going to DM you the name of the show that we had. I don't have these videotapes anymore, but let's just say that I can't say the word of the name of the that was the name. Starts with the letter R.
Hold on, I gotta read this. That is such a thing, that an early 2000s high school title for something.
Yeah, like literally the year 2000. And so we made a bunch of these videos, and like our teacher even let us like show them to the class, and they were like, "You guys are all idiots." Like, yeah, it's awesome. Like we did all kinds of stuff. And then I remember I did a bunch of radio skits because I wanted to be on the radio even when I was in like high school. And I remember I come up with all these different characters, and like I did an award show, and like we were presenting an award to Michael Landon. I was like, oh, hold on, he's in hell. So I summons the devil to try to bring Michael Landon, like from Little House on the Prairie. And like, this is in the Bible Belt in Missouri. I was in all kinds of stuff. I had this one character, it was great. It was the racist DJ that doesn't know he's racist, and he would like he would just like be in the middle of us like doing like his radio show, and he would just say something racist, and like a caller would call in and say he's racist. Like, how is that racist? It's like, you said this. I was way ahead of my time.
I was about to say that's really ahead of your time. I taught myself at a video edit. Well, I didn't teach myself. We did video editing in class, but I got super into video in college. My high school didn't have anything cool like that. So when I was in college, I was learning how to video edit, right? And I would just go, like, I would go to wrestling practice, and then I would literally have dinner, and I would go to the video editing lab with my VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And I would make videos all the time. And what I would do is I would watch Dave's stuff on WWE, and I would just rip it off.
Nice.
Like, I actually did a college holiday video to My Sacrifice, My Creed. Because that's what Dave Sahadi. I remember in my head, like, Dave Sahadi did this awesome. It's phenomenal video that Dave Sahadi did to My Sacrifice. So I totally ripped it off. And I literally think that I learned a lot about pace and video editing from watching Dave Sahadi and WWF TV shows.
Yeah.
2000.
I don't think anybody's ever, like, in pro wrestling. Some people have tried, but I don't think anybody's ever been able to kind of reach the peak of Dave Sahadi in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I completely agree with that. I completely agree with that. The man revolutionized video editing. I think everybody since then has been doing their best Dave Sahadi impression, and nobody's ever quite done it, because I can't name another one, right? Like, I couldn't tell you who edits videos for WWE or AEW or TNA nowadays.
I know Kevin Sullivan, he was in TNA with Dave Sahadi for a long time. Mm-hmm. He went to AEW, he's back with TNA. But like, they don't do the music videos anymore because you have to pay for the music rights.
Well, and then also music videos really aren't a thing. Like, I was explaining it to Andy's going through this massive grunge kick right now because I got him into Pearl Jam. So he's got his hair's really long and stringy, and he wears like flannel t-shirts and he's awesome. But then, I was showing him music videos. If you have me on Facebook, I post a music video every day because I love music videos. And like, it's a lost art. Like, music videos aren't really a thing anymore. So, I mean, there's no, like, it doesn't, like, that's kind of what revolutionized wrestling in the 80s was. This actually dovetails quite nicely now that we're here. Like, in the 80s, what really helped wrestling get popular is, like, really steering into that MTV generation, which we weren't even the MTV generation. We were, like infants and children during the birth of MTV, right? And like, but that's really what got wrestling popular with young people, was they were editing, like guys like Joel Watts, right? Were editing these, and Jerry Lawler even were
Jarrett. Yeah.
Yeah. They were editing these videos to like real music. Like, there's tons of them. Like, if you watch like UWF, you know, like Joel Watts is doing like, you know, major songs, and like Vince was using it as the bumpers of his shows. Like, the rock and wrestling connection, it was such a massive part of what made wrestling successful in those early to mid 80s was music videos. And again, that's, music videos really aren't a thing anymore. Like, people still kind of make them, but it's not like a thing.
No, because reality TV killed MTV.
Oh, it murdered
it. Yeah.
Murdered like, it in cold blood.
The worst thing to ever happen in my childhood is The Real World, by far, because I would come home every day and I would watch music videos. We used to call into Total Request Live in like 1999. Like, that was a big deal to my generation. And we would vote for My Ginger Generation by Limp Bizkit.
I remember I remember during the week of 9/11. Do you remember 9/11? The week after 9/11 was the most surreal thing in the world because the world didn't know. Nobody knew what to do. And I remember on MTV, they just played music videos.
Yeah. Again.
And I remember watching Hunger Strike, and like, man, I'm thinking to myself, man, I haven't seen this video in years. And I remember thinking, this is the only decent thing to come out of any of this, is MTV is just playing videos again.
Right.
And then when the world went back to normal, they went back to all the reality TV garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. If you, I think, I don't know if it's still available in the States. Helen, it might even be on my cable package. I'm not sure, but they have the MTV Classic channel, and all they do is show like classic music videos. So like occasionally I'll put that on. So they got the good stuff. Or they show old episodes of Headbangers Ball, which was always cool. You know, correct. Who I liked was 120 minutes with Matt Pinfield. Matt Pinfield. He's a legend.
So my cousin growing up, we're fucking so far off the reservation. My cousin had a band. They were called the Pulsars. And in 1996, they were in a Spin magazine as one of the top five new acts that had been signed in 1996. Number one was Matchbox 20, and the Pulsars were number two. And like, they didn't quite make it. Like, they were really big in Japan, but they didn't quite make it in the US. Their style was a little too 80s for like the mid 90s. But I remember watching their video premiere on 120 minutes. And Matt Pinfield like introduced my cousin's band, and my brother and I were just going ape shit because there's our cousin like with a real video on MTV that I think I'm the only person that I want.
You know, what's cool is our buddy, Baby Huey, Danny out of San Francisco, friends with Matt Pinfield. Like, they're legit friends. Yeah. That's
so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that. So sometimes Danny pops in here and checks out the show, but he and I were texting back and forth, and he was telling me that him and Matt Pinfield are cool. The guy rules.
Matt Pinfield was awesome. I learned, I discovered so much cool music because of Matt Pinfield. Hey, this is a wrestling show.
We're gonna talk about wrestling, and we're gonna talk about cable television. Numbers are gonna be down tonight, so I'm not expecting a whole lot of chats because we're up against all the Raw recap shows that are happening. Because Raw literally ended at 10:30. I wasn't watching, but it did end at 10:30 with a hot angle with Roman Reigns and Jacob Fatu. So
cool. That should be a pretty cool match, actually. I mean, like, all legit, Jacob Fatu is great, and so is Roman Reigns. So
yeah,
those two should have a pretty damn good match. But if you're here for a Raw review, this is the wrong show.
Yeah, I am going to talk Backlash because they did have a match. JD, Jacob and Roman had a match on Saturday. It was really great. It was. Yeah, it was great. So I'll give my Backlash recap there towards the end. But we are going to talk about pro wrestling, and we're going to talk about the importance of cable television in pro wrestling, and really the guy that is the impetus for that. The impetus for, like, I think one of the big reasons why cable got so big, and one of the big, probably the main reason why pro wrestling became big on cable, and that's because of Ted Turner, who we lost last week at the age of 87. I did a little mini tribute on a Brace for Impact, but it isn't the same without JD here, because this is our wheelhouse, talking about, you know, history and classic wrestling and the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And so let's go ahead and get into Ted Turner, man. You know, Dave Meltzer said on his radio show last week, and he said it in the news. Did you get a chance to read the obit that he did? If you haven't, it's fantastic. I read every single page. It's fantastic. But, you know, according to Dave and according to many, either the number two or the number three most important person in wrestling in the last 50 years, Ted Turner.
I can't disagree more. Like, so you got to put yourself, you got to take this back. So I want you to really, like, take into consideration the history of professional wrestling in the United States, right? In the Dumont era, God, I got to do that thing. In the Dumont era, so you're talking like the 50s, television really was expansive. Like, you know, everything went across the globe. So, like, everybody was watching, like, specifically Chicago pro wrestling, like Fred Kohler's wrestling from Marigold, right? That's where Gorgeous George becomes a star. Vern Gagne becomes a star. It reaches across. Now, when the Dumont network itself kind of dies, the flagship network on the Dumont, the flagship of the Dumont network was WGN Television in Chicago. So when that kind of dies out, pro wrestling starts really becoming more regionalized. And that's really when the NWA little pocket territories become a thing. Like, and in this era, right, your territory, the world was a lot smaller back then, right? You only got, nice job, man.
Yeah, So I just wanted to bring this up because you're talking about it. On this day in 1957, WGN Chicago canceled Fred Kohler's Marigold Wrestling Series. So
see, I didn't know. Is that literally did Alan Cheat? Did Alan Blackstock post that today?
10 hours ago. Yeah.
Jeez, yeah. I don't have Twitter anymore because my account got hacked. I had no idea that this was that it was actually 69 years ago today. Did I do the math right?
Yeah, I think I think so, but
69,
something like that. Yeah,
something like that. Whatever. I can't crush math right now. But yeah, so wrestling for Marigold was basically Raw of the mid 50s, right? The mid to late 50s. So when that show gets canceled, wrestling becomes very pocketed. Like it doesn't go across. And this is when, because Fred Kohler used to in these little arenas, these small arenas. What they did is, and they pulled it back, and they started doing it in the studios. Like the best example that modern people could think of would be Memphis, because it lasted the longest. Memphis TV, WMC, I believe, was the channel down in Memphis. So every Saturday morning they would broadcast their show, and that was just an easy way. It was studio wrestling. It was an easy thing to do. You knock it out, you record a tape, you send it on a loop to all the major stations in your territory. Easy way to do wrestling. Okay, so we all know every territory had its own little pocket. Sorry. So what happens in the late 1970s is cable television and satellites start changing things, right? And there's a pocket of these super stations, as they called them. They were regular television stations that, due to satellites, got broadcast across all of cable television. WOR New York is one.
WGN
in Chicago is another.
KTLA out of LA was.
We didn't get that one, actually. No. That was a superstation. We didn't get it in the Midwest, so I actually didn't know that. And then the most famous of the superstations was WTCG, which then becomes WTBS under Ted Turner. Ted Turner bought that station in the mid 70s. One of the first things he had on there was professional wrestling. I believe he had both Ann Gunkel's Georgia promotion and, of course, Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Yeah.
Right. Georgia Championship Wrestling became the most watched show in cable television because the style of Georgia wrestling, it had Southern based, more athletic style. Right. That was a lot. People tell me WWF has always been the best television. That's bullshit. I really legitimately want you to go back and watch like early 80s WWF television.
It's so bad.
It's awful. They do angles once. And that Vern stuff was horrible too. Vern's whole television was brutal.
Yeah. The best from the early 80s, because you can go back and see a lot of this stuff. It used to be on the WWE Network, but now it's just on YouTube. You had probably it's Watts and it's Dallas and it's Georgia Championship Wrestling. And then you could probably make an argument for Mid-Atlantic in that early 80 time period. But WWF would be like pulling up the rear for sure.
What the WWF booking is not great. The show is not. The style is very plotty. And they will tell you, well, the personalities were bigger. No, that's not true. What worked best for WWF television was that it was broadcast out of New York.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what helped it. Now, the program that was literally booked by Ole Anderson in the early 80s caught fire. The television became very episodic television. And then they started, that was influencing what Watts did in Mid-South. Now, Ted Turner had professional wrestling on his networks from jump before he owned the Braves, before he owned like 3/4 of Atlanta, quite frankly.
Yeah.
He had pro wrestling, and pro wrestling was what kept that network floating in the early days, right? So he was always loyal to professional wrestling to the point where it became one of those world championship wrestling. World championship wrestling on TBS spans 4 different promotions. All had the singular world championship wrestling show. So you're talking Georgia champion, the original Georgia championship. You're talking the WWF, which was when Vince was purchasing everything, the crown jewel, and they called this because it was the highest rated show on cable television. Georgia Championship Wrestling, World Championship Wrestling, whatever you want to call it, was the highest rated show on cable television, and it became a WWF show. And they changed nothing about the presentation. They changed the wrestling and where it was from, but they had that same beginning, that 605, that intro lasts through 4 different promotions. right? And then it gets brought by Crockett, and Crockett transforms Mid-Atlantic into, you know, it comes here for Crockett Promotions. It gets labeled the NWA, right? And then finally, WCW, right? It's all, the lineage runs through that, and that is all Ted Turner. Ted Turner is the second most important, I'll say number two, most important wrestling person of the 20th century, behind only Vince. And behind is even like, you know, Ted Turner only thought about wrestling when he had to. Vince again thought about it every day.
And that's, to call it, I don't think it's a knock, but that's kind of like, that's why people didn't vote for him for the Hall of Fame, because wrestling was like this little, wrestling was this little thing that he had on his channel, but it was one of the least important things that he owned, because he owned TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, Turner Classic Movies. He owned CNN. He owned the Braves, Atlanta Hawks. He owned the Champions Cup, you know, and he did all this other stuff. And it was just, wrestling was like this little fun thing that he had on his station that he would just never let die. And it almost died several times, right? In fact, Jim Crockett, when he bought the company, or he bought the time slot from Vince, right? He bought World Championship Wrestling from Vince in 1985, and he ran that thing into the ground. And because he just overspent with not only just the production, but the wrestlers that he had. And so he's going out of business. So Ted Turner bought him out. What, 1988, JD? Was that it? Yeah. 88. So he had it for like 3 years. And then from like 1988 on, he just hired a bunch of crooks and swindlers to run the company, and like just one big flop after another, that just couldn't make any money with that thing. They just, like, despite the fact that they were on the biggest cable channel, they couldn't make any money until Bischoff takes it over, and he didn't start making money like for a few years in either. But he just wouldn't let the thing die. Like in 92, they actually tried to get him to kill it, and he's like, no, this, it's never going to die as long as I'm in charge.
Mm-hmm. When Jim Herd let Ric Flair go in 1991, Ted Turner's like, what the fuck, man? How are you gonna let Ric Flair? Like, that was like step one in his like, you know, the end of Jim Herd, is he let Flair go, and it pissed off Ted Turner.
He was gone shortly thereafter that, and like when he bought the thing, they didn't even have Ric Flair under contract, and so like Ted almost didn't buy it. So they had to get Flair under contract before Ted was even willing to buy the thing. That's how important that Flair was.
Hang on. The Heat is on 76 says he had more interest in Jane Fonda than he did wrestling. Wise man. Yeah, no kidding, man.
Yeah, look at Jane.
look at Jane Fonda, even in the mid-90s, man. You're talking about one of the all-time classic hotties. Like,
oh, so Jim Cornette had this classic line when describing Ted Turner versus Vince McMahon. He said Ted Turner was the cool billionaire that had sex with all the movie stars, and he had Jane Fonda, and he was just this fun-loving guy that everybody wanted to be around. And Vince McMahon was this abused child from the trailer park that was trying to get back at the world. And that is such a perfect fucking way to describe the two of them. Just in like, okay, say what you want about Jim Cornette. Okay, not a great guy. I don't want him to teach an ethics course, but he's like a wealth of knowledge, and he does know how to describe things very well. And that was a great way to describe the two of those guys.
He's a remarkably articulate man. No doubt. That's 100% true. Is like, you ever seen what Ann Gunkel, like Turner had an affair with Ann Gunkel in the '70s. Have you ever seen what Ann Gunkel looked like, Mike?
She's a supermodel. They went to college together. He got kicked out of college because he had chicks in his dorm. And like, and this dude, like, he gets out of college, and have you seen the documentary on Max?
I have not actually.
It's really good. It's like a 4 or 5 part series. And they don't mention wrestling. I think they mentioned wrestling once. That's how like important it was to Ted, right, into his life. But he gets kicked out of college, and then he goes back home. His dad commits suicide, right? And his dad owned this billboard business in the South, and he ends up taking it over, and then just kind of the thing just starts booming and goes crazy, and he ends up making enough money from the sign printing business to bought a TV station here in Charlotte, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And he bought the TV station Channel 17 in Atlanta, which was one of the smaller stations, and he just had the balls to put it on cable. Like, the guy was just a maverick, the cool billionaire, like inappropriate at times, a playboy, just everything. Like, the balls in this guy, he bought the fucking Braves fired the manager and then made himself manager for a day.
just to do it,
because he was just like an awesome dude. And he was successful at everything that he did. And that was the big difference between him and Vince. Like Ted, ultimately, WCW, outside of a couple years, wasn't a success. Everything else he did was, right? And Vince, the only thing he was ever successful at was wrestling.
I'll be honest with you. I think WCW was a success because look what happened when Ted was pushed out of Turner. It died an instant death, and pro wrestling was never the same. Like you, I look back at people like, oh, they like long for the ruthless aggression era, and I'm like, ah, you just grew up at the wrong time. It's like being nostalgic for like vanilla ice cream. You know, sure, it's good, but there's so much better out there. Like, I'll be honest with you, and this is going to be the most controversial thing I've ever said on this show, and I'm gonna stand by it. Ted Turner is the guy that Donald Trump presents himself as.
100%. Yeah.
Donald, like Trump likes to talk about how he took his thing and became this great billionaire. Ted Turner actually did. Ted Turner was a rich kid, no doubt. And he'd be the first to tell you he started the game of life on third base, but he made it home and did everything great. And Ted Turner, like in his dying days, like was super committed to like planetary causes. Like he wanted to fix the environment. Like
he invented Captain Planet.
I was just going to say that.
Yes.
That was his mark. Is like, we need to get kids to care about the environment. Yeah. So he spearheaded Captain Planet. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the original Planeteer. You could be saving our Earth is the thing to do. But that's Ted Turner. The influence the man had. We could say he was like, wrestling stays on TBS. Make it work, Eric. And Eric's like, well, we can't beat Vince. He's like, oh, you need a spot on primetime? Give Eric a spot on primetime. Fuck you, Vince. Like, yeah. That's the kind of power that Ted Turner had. And it's weird because, like, as a billionaire, like, I don't know, billionaires are great, but he's the best. You know, like, he tried to, like, destroy the planet. Like, he was actually in favor of trying to save it and trying to make, like, the way I look at it is, like, Ted Turner ensured that the business of professional wrestling, because when we talk about the professional wrestling boom of the 1980s, Mike, you're a business guy. What comes after boom cycles?
Down cycles.
Yeah, and that's what happened in the late 80s. Everything downcycled. Ted Turner kept blood and money and life in professional wrestling at a time when it was dying. Like, we don't have the boom of the mid-90s, the mid to late 90s, if Ted Turner specifically wasn't keeping it alive. You go, oh, Vince. Vince's business was dying too. You look at some pictures of 1994, 1995, 1993, WWF, it's not good. Like,
yeah.
They weren't making money either. Ted kept it alive.
He
kept the fire.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And him going head to head on Monday nights, and that was his idea. Now Eric Bischoff executed it, right? Bischoff does deserve a lot of credit for
100%.
But he will tell you, and he's told the story a billion times, and he's pretty much kept the story the same. He walked in there to pitch. Selling WCW to international networks, to like Sky in the UK, and Ted wanted to hear none of it. He just wanted to know how he can compete with Vince, and so that's how he ended up on Monday nights head to head with Raw, and sure enough, you know, with the vision that Eric had, and making Nitro into a party like atmosphere, which God we need in wrestling today. We need something like that right now. We had it for a little bit with Dynamite, and I think it's lost a significant amount of luster as far as like being the fun show, the party show, the destination program every week. Like that's what we had with Nitro in the first couple of years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I think AEW is trying to get that back. Like I really think like something like Fairway to Heaven.
Fairway to Hell. Yeah, they did a show from. That was a cool looking show. They did it from a Top Golf, but
I think that's the kind of vibe that WCW Nitro used to have. Like the best episodes of Nitro weren't the ones from the giant arenas. It was from the smaller venues that shit would get crazy. So, I mean, I think that watching Collision this weekend brought me back to a lot of those fun Nitro episodes. I think that's the kind of stuff that Tony Khan needs to steer into more. For sure. More fun environment shows and trying to find a way to make it cool. It's harder in this environment because WWE, is such an all-encompassing presence where there's so much it used to be back in the day, the media, well, like they didn't touch anything with a 10-foot pole unless it was deemed good enough. Now the media is so, to use a kid's term that I hear every day, they just glaze everybody. right? Yeah. The media try, like, there is a constant, mm-hmm. and they glaze WWE with stuff. Like, and they don't just, like, it used to be if the media covered you, you were getting a handout from them, you know? Right. Now it's the other way around. It's like they want to cover you. And it's been, it's very, that's a very different way because between news and media stuff from when we were growing up to what it is now. So it's a harder environment than it is back then. But Ted Turner and what Time Warner is just what they were able to do. They just kept wrestling alive. They kept the heartbeat going for a long time. Because I'll be honest with you, if WCW goes, if Ted never buys Crockett, right, and it dies, right, if it dies, Vince's business is out by 1993. That's 100%.
Yeah, yeah, because he was on his ass during that steroid scandal, yep. right? To where he actually had Jerry Jarrett, like, you know, now Bruce Prichard will say that's not true, but everybody else will say it is, that he had Jerry Jarrett in-house ready to take over for the WWF because he thought he was going to go to prison, right? If that happens, it's done because Jerry Jarrett's an old Memphis promoter. I don't think Jerry Jarrett would have been able to do national wrestling. I don't know. And we saw with TNA what he did in the early days. Like, I know that Vince Russo and Jeff were kind of booking it, but Jerry's hands were in that too. Genius for Memphis. I don't know. Like, doing, I don't know that you can do Memphis nationally. I don't think that works. So,
no, I don't either. I don't think, because again, the regional products were very much in the tastes of the region. Like, and again, a lot of times the taste makers decided what was the taste. Like, Vern decided what was cool in the upper Midwest, right?
Yeah.
And like, Vince Sr. decided what was cool. So it was what they liked. It was the promoters liked. They educated. The problem is you had a bunch of other people. And Vince, it took Vince a generation. Like, it really, really did. It took him a solid generation for him to determine what professional wrestling was in the world and across the globe. Because there were holdouts, right? The mainstream caught on pretty quick. But, I mean, it wasn't the all-encompassing thing that it would become, like I said, a generation later. Without Ted Turner's, I think Ted Turner, even though he didn't think about wrestling every day, I think his maverick spirit and attitude is what professional wrestling is. Like, if pro wrestling is the carny, seedy grossness that is Vince McMahon, it is also the rebellious, maverick, can-do-ness that was Ted Turner. Like, I think these two guys are, I really think the two of them are like a yin-yang, right? And I think that you need both of them to encompass what professional wrestling became in the latter half, in the latter quarter, I should say, of the 20th century into the 21st. And that both of them, both of their personalities and spirits complement each other in ways where they didn't really like each other, but you needed both of those sides, like Vince being the yin and Ted being the yang.
Yeah. Yeah. Where Vince was always striving to be Ted, and he could just never be Ted because Ted was great at everything, you know, and Vince was great at one thing. Right. And Vince was the greatest at that one thing. I mean, he's by far the greatest wrestling promoter that ever lived. I don't think anybody's going to take that away from him. But I think Ted Turner's probably the greatest media entrepreneur like of the last 20th century. And a big part of that was his success owning a wrestling business. Now, that wrestling business didn't do a goddamn thing for a year. Like, it had produced a lot of great moments that we love. But as far as like making money, I was just going through the Observer and like in 89, Steamboat and Flair in the Superdome, they only sold like 1500 tickets for a $15,000 gate.
But they didn't advertise it. Like, that's the idiocy of George Scott. Like, the problem with the Turner owned professional wrestling industry was that they recognized that they didn't know how to run a wrestling business. So they hired people who supposedly did. And the truth, the vast majority of people who work in wrestling also don't know how to work wrestling businesses.
No, yeah, that's why I said he hired one crook and swindler after another. I think he finally got an honest guy in there with Kip Fry, but he was a lawyer. But then eventually he finally got a visionary in there, and that was Eric Bischoff, who was like a salesman. And then eventually he was in over his head too, because the too many contracts got way too bloated, business was down, and everything died.
I don't know if that's true. This is, unfortunately, Vince made more money off of WCW than Ted did. I mean, like, I don't think that's accurate.
Well, like, percentage-wise, for sure.
But what if Vince bought it for a, like,
2.5.
I thought it was 1.7. Was it 2.5?
Yeah. Well, I think the original reports were 2.5, and maybe it ended up being 1.7. But he's been selling that IP ever since. He's probably made 10 times the money since then.
Well, that's how it goes, especially with inflation and stuff like that. But I mean, at the same time, it's like Ted didn't care. Yeah. Like for him, wrestling wasn't about making money. It was about doing something fun and cool. Yeah. Like Ted had no problem. Like, again, I think this is like, we get in this, it's like people say that wrestling is like WWE is the only wrestling matters because more people watch it. Like not everything can be quantified, and quality is hard to, and believe me, lots of WWE isn't quality, but I mean, like it's hard to quantify that. Like Ted believed in having businesses that lost money if they were for the greater good. Right, the greater good being like, is it cool? Like when I say the greater good, that's pretty what Ted was. This is a cool thing to have. But yeah, let's do it. This is a guy. Do you know, Mike, the history of the Ted Turner Rupert Murdoch feud?
Give us a brief history of that.
They got into an argument over a yacht race. It's the most rich white guy bullshit of all time. Like, but he just did the two of them hate, like the entire reason Fox News exists is because Rupert Murdoch doesn't like Ted Turner.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, Feinstone's in the chat. Let's get to Feinstone. He said, one of my favorite stories about Ted Turner is that despite Vince making him one of the biggest villains of his life, Turner didn't even have Vince in his top 10. HBO Max did a 4-part series on Ted Turner. Vince was not mentioned once. Vince has had two major documentaries, one produced by WWE, the other one produced by Netflix, and he's bashing Ted in almost every episode. Right. And then they did the WCW versus WWE, like the Monday Night War series that they had on the network back in the day. And it's just like Vince bashing Ted and the incompetence of WCW. Ted Turner wasn't incompetent. He was more than competent. He just liked having it on a show, and he just let other people run it and didn't really think about it that much. He would not let anybody get rid of it while he was in charge, because he liked it and it helped build his station. He doesn't have the empire without it, and he would have been the first one to tell you that. Mm-hmm. But again, he was just like kind of a fan of it. He did not want to run the business of it. He just financed the operation.
If I may steal a Joe Lanza-ism, like there's a Don Draper thing from Mad Men where I never watched the show, so I don't know the two characters' lines, but like the villain, like this guy who's Draper's rival is like, you know, talking about how much he thinks about their rivalry, and Don Draper looks and goes, I don't even think about you.
Yeah.
And that's Ted Turner to Vince. Man, Ted Turner didn't Vince sent Ted Turner this like nasty fax once. And Ted was like, fuck off, Vince. And that's the whole impetus behind Nitro, is that Ted's like, I fucking hate this man. I'm going to go right. I'm going to run opposition.
Yeah. Famously, whenever they did the Billionaire Ted skits, they like, I think it was Busted Open. It might have been Ariel Helwani, somebody interviewing Eric after Ted dies. And they go, did that make Ted mad? And he goes, no, he laughed at that. He thought it was hilarious. He thought it was great. And he goes, and he also knew that he got under Vince's skin because Vince sold it like a little bitch. And he did. Oh, yeah, that's Eric Bischoff. So, like, he's such a little smarmy shit sometimes.
A little smarmy piece of shit.
Yeah, he is.
God.
And so we make fun of Eric on this thing. But you know what? This is not the day to make fun of Eric, because he helped produce my favorite TV shows of my childhood. So we're not going to bash Eric today.
Exactly. Vince would like get mad about Ted and would stew about Ted, and Ted would not think about Vince and go home and lay it to Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
Who would you rather be?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Of course you would much rather, like Vince owned a failing football franchise. Ted Turner owned the Braves and they won the World Series and were one of the most successful baseball franchises in the country, to where it sickens me to even say it, because I hated the fact that there were so many Braves fans in my school, and I lived in California, and like, we're supposed to be Dodgers fans or Giants fans, but no, but because of TBS, we had Braves fans all over my school, and it was gross.
I was a Braves fan. I was a White Sox. I'm a White Sox fan until I died.
I'm gonna get the fuck off, Mike.
My mother was a Cubs fan, so cheering the Braves because of WCW let me have one up on my mom, especially because they took Greg Maddux from the Cubs. Maddux, dude, that freaking, look at that. Maddux, Schmaltz,
like, Chipper. Andrew Jones, dude, that pitching staff was like Glavin, Maddux, and Smoltz. Give me a fucking break.
What a 1-2-3 combination. Okay. And Rolly Boys. Oh, go ahead. I'll go ahead.
Finish. Oh, and they only won one World Series, which is crazy with that, that fucking team.
It's not hard to win the World Series back then. Okay. Like, people are spoiled. Anyway, Rolly Boys is he and Vince hates Ted Turner because he brought in Hogan. No, that's not true. You're watching documentaries. Like Ted Turner hired Hogan because Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair said, "We want to hire Hulk Hogan." And Ted said, "Okay." Like, he hates Ted Turner. He hates Ted Turner because Ted Turner made him canceled him.
That's
the truth.
So when Vince bought the Georgia Championship Wrestling and he closed the company, he took over the time slot World Championship Wrestling 6:05 on TBS on Saturday nights, right? When he took over that time slot, it was the number one wrestling time slot in the country. Vince came in, brought his show, and it tanked. Mm-hmm. So it was so bad that, you know, people started complaining about it. And they had to give Ole Anderson another time slot on Saturday mornings for Championship Wrestling from Georgia. Also bad. But then he still wanted wrestling to be a success. So he made a deal with Watts and gave Watts a Sunday show, which was also the number one rated show. Like it every single week was beating World Championship Wrestling. It beat it every single week. And to where like Ted Turner was actually going to make a deal with Watts to buy into his company, and like Watts was going to be like the number one show. Like he was going to cancel. Vince was on his way out. He was getting canceled. He was going to shit can Ole's show because that was tanking as well. And he was just going to run with Watts. But then, you know, Vince made a deal with Jim Crockett to sell to him. And then like Jim Crockett took it over and was a success. Like Jim Crockett was not a good wrestling promoter, but they were like, on the show. Like during those years, he just didn't make money. He just spent too much goddamn money, and
they
ruined
it. That's a misnomer. Like they made plenty of money. The problem is they spent
they didn't
need to buy a plane. Right. Like they spent poorly. Because you look at 85, 86 Crockett, dude, they're rolling. But they just spent W was overspending, and they bought new office. They bought the world-class office buildings in Dallas.
Yeah.
They didn't need to do that.
No.
Like, that's the problem, is they were they were spending more than they were making. Like, and that was nothing to do with promoting of wrestling.
I should have said he was a terrible businessman.
I agree with that. We'll go with that.
Yeah, because he did not keep the overhead low. They were trying to, you know what I always tell airmen whenever I'm like they're coming into my base, I would say, don't spend chief money when all you got is airman first class money, right? Because a lot of times you go to the dorms and you would see fucking these 20-year-old kids with BMWs. Like, you guys, like that car payment's your whole paycheck, right? Don't go spend. Like that was Jim Crockett, because he was on, they finally got onto national television, national cable, because they were basically running Mid-Atlantic was just local. Like they, at that point, up until they bought that time slot, they had not been national, right? They were just strict Mid-Atlantic. Yeah, so they buy it, and now they're trying to, you know, they're moving into Chicago, Philadelphia, you know, down south to Atlanta. They're moving out west, and they just overspent. They outspent their infrastructure, thinking that they could keep up with Vince, and they just couldn't do it because they didn't know what they were doing.
The problem is they didn't have an accountant who was honest with the Crockett family. They said that the accountant just didn't tell them how much they were spending, and then nobody was telling Dusty no.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's the thing. If you have a business, you got to have a bad guy who's willing to tell. And to be fair, Vince had no problem being a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was stronger. And again, when it came to Ted was a freaking billionaire. WCW could have lost money forever and run to this day.
Yeah,
the problem was he got, when the Time Warner merger happened, Ted got cut out.
Yeah. Well, at a certain point, they lost $60 million. I don't think Ted was willing to lose $60 million.
Yeah, that's
like in the early 90s, they were losing six. Ted can handle $6 million. 60, that is a big difference. And the reason why is because they increased their spending on those contracts. And then, of course, they had the two shows going. And so everything was just so bloated. But the business was down because of how bad the creative was and how fucking shit the management was of WCW.
Yeah, but that in itself doesn't happen until the merger.
Yeah.
You know, if
2000.
2000. So I mean, I truly believe that Ted would have let it live on his networks. Maybe he would have sold the company.
I think he would have sold it to Eric and his company, and then just ran it on a smaller budget for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which was the plan, but you know, very famously, AOL and Jimmy Kellner's like, we don't want wrestling.
Yeah, And honestly, like, everybody like makes Jimmy Kellner out to be the bad guy that he killed WCW. Like, he put the final nail in the coffin, but that had been dying for a while, right? Because it had been just poorly mismanaged for a couple of years, and the show was terrible. It was embarrassing to watch. And if you're an executive there, you don't want that on your fucking channel. Of course they should have canceled that shit. It was terrible. I celebrated when it died.
We were watching Juggalo Championship a couple weeks ago, and it's not a whole lot different than what 2000 WCW was like.
Same fucking idiots in charge. Sorry.
Well, yeah, that's why I brought it up. Like, you go back and watch some, like, the Russo Atlas was telling me did ratings, and it's like, no, it didn't. It did bad. That's why it was canceled. And the creative is really, really bad. Like, it's the same if you look at, like, I know we got some old TNA Asylum people on here. You watch, like, 2001, 2004 TNA. Like, before they go on to Fox Sports Net, it's really bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad. TNA is really, really bad in its early days. And that's Vince Russo. Vince Russo, like, I've never seen a man be able to cling to early success as successfully as Vince Russo has a career because Steve Austin is the biggest star in the world.
Yeah, he reminds me of, like, you know, Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator for the Steelers. Like, they won the Super Bowl, right? And then he goes on to be a head coach, he gets fired, and he goes on to be the offensive coordinator at all these other places, gets fired. He's still coaching to this day, and he's still terrible. He's in the UFL now, or in some independent, like, football league, still doing his thing, still can't run a football team, right? Like, that's him. Like, that's fucking Vince Russo.
That's a great comparison. Like, it just, it's so funny because, like, I interviewed Tony Khan there, and he was trying to tell Tony Khan about booking. It's like, dude, Tony Khan has booked way more successful stuff than you ever have.
Yeah.
Like, you got to write the show when you had two of the biggest stars in the history of professional wrestling and Vince McMahon at his absolute best. Like,
and
you look back at those shows and they fucking suck.
Yeah. He had an all time great, like, 2 year run. I think, the heat is on saying he's been living off his 2 year successful run that ended in 1999. Yeah, for sure. Like, the guy had a million ideas. And McMahon was able to filter those ideas and then, like, try to keep the best of them to put them on a TV. And then he leaves to WCW and WWF gets better.
Yeah.
it legitimately does, right?
Because you lose Beaver Cleavage and you lose Gold Dust as a transvestite or sick, whatever you want to call him at the time. Like, anything that's not Steve Austin on those shows is really, really bad.
It's being carried by Austin and The Rock, two generational performers that I had a hand in a lot of the stuff that they were doing. Super charismatic and all-time greats. But Ted Turner for the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. I know he's going to get the death push this year. I think some people are going to fight against it because they don't like the idea of a death push. But I think, you know, with that obit that Dave wrote and all of the outpouring of support that's coming out for him, I don't think anybody can really say anything bad about Ted. The only knock on him is that he did not think about wrestling a whole lot, but I don't really think that disqualifies him. I think that, you know, there were several times where wrestling could have been canceled and he kept the thing alive, kept pumping money into it for, you know, well, he had, it was on a show from what, 1973. He kept it until 2001. Until 2001. I mean, that is a hell of a run, a hell of a long time to keep wrestling alive when it probably should have died several times before then.
28 years, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, rest in peace, Ted Turner.
I'm going to be so annoying come Hall of Fame season. I'm going to try to get myself on everybody's show and do nothing but pitch Ted Turner. Like, Rich, you're going to have me on the Gordy list, and all I'm going to talk about is Ted Turner.
Did you see the Did you see the horny
Gordy list?
Gordy list. Okay, sorry. Gordy. You said that.
We talked about Jane Fonda already.
Hold on. Is Dustin Rhodes last active WCW wrestler? No, Jericho was just on Dynamite. He was just on, like, Jericho's in, like, a big match coming up. And I'm pretty sure, like, Crowbar is still around. You know, but, like, on mainstream television, it's probably Jericho and Dustin Rhodes.
Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, there you go. That's a great name. Yeah, for sure.
It's like, there's still a handful. There's not a lot, but there's still They're still Florida.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody from WCW that's in TNA, and I just don't think so. There's people in TNA that used to work for WCW that's behind the scenes. Like Ross Foreman was their communications director back in the day. But
I thought they had somebody. I haven't looked at that TNA roster in a while, but I thought there was someone old that was still floating around there. I don't know.
When I was in Atlanta, they did have Action Mike Jackson in a squash match. He's like 70 some years old.
He's the last Georgia championship wrestler still around.
Yeah. Alabama junior heavyweight champion. Lance Storm doesn't wrestle, but he was there.
Lance retired decades ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted Turner should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. I don't think they're ever putting him in.
Oh, that's different. That's different.
They don't put that many owners in, and he was so eccentric and fought against the grain all the time and was kind of a wacky owner. And really, like, the success of the Braves when he owned it was like 10 years. But it was a hell of a 10-year run for sure.
Hell yeah.
Bobby Cox, rest in peace. Yeah. He's in the Hall of Fame, man. He's one of the greatest managers that ever lived.
Hell of a manager.
Hell of a manager. Yeah, an absolute legend. All right. I was supposed to just go quick tonight, but we talked about Ted Turner, so I knew that it was going to go long. Real quick, just want to make a note or bring up, this is not going to take long. AEW has filed a lawsuit against Triller TV, Fight TV, Flips Media, whatever you want to call it. The suit seeks nearly $5 million in allegedly unpaid revenue as of April 2026. A demand letter from AEW's cancel plus interest accruing at 2% per month under the contract. So for everybody that was wondering why my AEW was created internationally, it's because they were ending their deal with Fight TV or Triller because Triller was not paying them. So because Triller had AEW Plus internationally and was like their top, you know, pay-per-view provider. So Triller TV not doing good. They're probably going under at some point soon.
I would imagine this gets resolved in bankruptcy court.
Yeah, and I don't think that AEW is going to get anywhere near that $5 million. I'm sure some creditors and insurance companies are going to get all that money. AEW might get a couple pennies.
They'll get it. They'll pick the bones, and that'll be
yeah.
But you got to sue. That's what you got to do.
Yep. You have to sue. All right. So JD, for the first time in a couple years, I watched Backlash. Was not planning on it.
Why? But
I did want to see Roman versus Jacob because you and I love Jacob
Fatu. Jacob Fatu rules. He's fantastic.
Yeah. And I happen to think that Roman Reigns is a great wrestler. So yeah, I know he's a Fed guy. So, you know, we're not allowed to say he's good. He's actually really good. But, mm-hmm. You know, they were doing the cinema stuff for a couple of years. I thought that sucked. But I think him personally, I think he's a great wrestler. So I wanted to see that match. So, My daughter had a birthday party to go to. It was like 6 o'clock at night at a bowling alley. So I had just the boy by myself and the TV. So we were able to watch some wrestling together. But just want to go over the results. Bron Breakker defeated Seth Rollins. If somebody gave this one like close to a five boy, I wouldn't have an argument there. I thought that match was fantastic. And Bron Breakker defeated Seth Rollins. Seth taking some heat though, because he did a move that he's been doing forever that Will Ospreay also does, but Ospreay does it better. But now Seth Rollins is 40 with two bad knees and a bad back. And it's whenever, you know, he's running off of the ropes and someone goes to clothesline him and he does like kind of a float over into like a backflip float over. And then he's going to power bomb him like right after that. Well, he didn't get over all the way, landed on top of his head. Bron Breakker like saw what happened and just hit him with a moonsault immediately. So great recovery by the kid. So good job, Steiner good job, Jr. Yeah.
Steiner.
But a lot of people on the internet are dogging Seth Rollins saying he was never good. Actually,
he's good.
He's great. And then if you were ever to leave the WWE and go to AEW, he'd be immediately a top star there where he would have an excellent 6-star match with Will Ospreay and the AEW fans would absolutely love him. So,
but he probably should just retire that spot.
Yeah, probably should retire that spot. Look, the guy's got two bad knees and he's in his 40s now. Fucking take a break. Trick Williams with Little Yachty.
Yachty.
Yachty. Okay. I'm not sure this guy actually has a yacht, but apparently he's famous. defeated Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn, who probably did this match at 50% of the rate that he was getting before. I'm almost positive on that.
Oh, we think Sami Zayn is the guy they're talking about.
I'm thinking it's Sami, yeah. Pretty like, well, there was like quite a few, but you know, some names are getting tossed out there. Sami and Kevin Owens is another name, and Kevin Owens is like injured anyway, so see where he's going. Where is he going to go? A lot of people think LA Knight might be one of those guys. I was like, ah, what the hell is LA Knight going to do? Like, where else is he going to go?
Oh, he'll keep, yeah. Because he's, I don't see him going to AEW. We speculated this last week. I don't think that Saudi money's coming in.
Well, we'll see. You know, there's a lot of excuses, people making excuses for TKO to pay people less than what they signed them for. I think if the wrestlers have to adhere to their contract, I think the TKO should too. So, or WWE. So, even if they're not bringing in the money. So, Danhausen and Mini Danhausen defeated The Miz and Kit Wilson. So they were teasing a mystery partner for Danhausen, and he had a big box. And it was Danhausen's cloning machine, and he was supposed to bring out a Danhausen clone, but he fucked it up, and out came Masquerita Sagrada in a Danhausen mask. Everybody shit on it.
This is what you do with Danhausen. Yes, like this is why he didn't work in AEW, because this is just not how they book. But this is how WWE books. So I just keep thinking like this should have happened like 6 years ago. Yeah, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be like at this point. I actually my kid was home and I had to like put her down to go to bed. So I missed this match. So, and I also missed the next match. Io Sky defeats Asuka. Asuka apparently retired or like close to it. So they're saying that she's either semi-retired or she's taking a lot of time off or whatever's going on with her. But she might be out. A great fucking wrestler is Asuka, man. She's just fantastic and has been for a really long time.
Quick fact. Heat is on, says top two merchandise seller Danhausen. Danhausen, his entire career, has been one of the top, if not the top merchandise seller in whatever promotion he's in. When he was in Ring of Honor, he was a top merchandise guy. When he was in AEW, he was a top 3 to 4 merchandise guy when he was like being pushed on the show. Like, Danhausen sells merchandise. Like, he's like that everywhere. It was a no-brainer with him and W. That's why we were so surprised that his debut was so weird. But Mike was right. They did something on purpose that was shitty to get some attention, and it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was bad on purpose, and I fully believe that bring out the mini clone. It was designed to get shit on, but it's Masquerita Sagrada, the mini from AAA, and he went out there and he was awesome. he was amazing. I saw some of the clips online. I missed the match, but then he sticks the little guy back into the cloning machine and he makes another like a whole gang of minis, and then they all chased the Miz and Kit Wilson around and beat them up. So he had all these little guys, and it's so stupid.
It's so stupid, but it's so WWE. It's stuff they've been doing since the 80s. Like, whatever.
It's all over the internet, but it reminded me of a scene from Jackass the movie, where they had like two little people in a bar getting into a fight, like a pretend fight. And all of a sudden, like, a mini police officer comes in, and like the cops are fighting, and all of a sudden mini ambulance comes in, and they have like mini stretchers, and this is in like a bar with like full size people. They're none the wiser of what's going on. It kind of reminded me of that. So, all right. Now that I've explained Jackass to everybody. All right. And then, last but not least, Roman Reigns defeats Jacob Fatu. They kept Jacob strong though. So they had an amazing match. I thought it was a really awesome match. Tons of, you know, obviously big moves and near falls. It was kind of a Heyman booked match, but they give Jacob an out. They didn't do any interference, but they did a kind of a ref spot. And then Jacob was grabbing Roman. Roman was trying to get away from him, and he pulled the turnbuckle pad off, and then Roman threw Jacob into the turnbuckle, hit him with like the fourth spear, and that's how he pinned him. And then afterwards, Jacob went crazy and beat the shit out of Roman and beat up. He super kicked Shane Helms, and like he beat up Adam Pearce, and he beat up all the agents and refs who were coming out to stop it. So made him look like a monster, and that's how they closed Raw tonight too. Like during Raw, Fatu beat the shit out of Roman again, so they're going back to that match. But I like seeing my guy Jacob Fatu in the main events and making that big dough. So.
I'm happy for the guy. I remember when he was part of it, when he was like the centerpiece of Contra in MLW, and I'm like, this guy's great. Like, yeah. I wonder if Roman will put over his cousin for the title. I could see it.
Yeah, I could see it. I don't know that the company will want to go with Jacob, but just because the way the company is, I don't think they're really worried about, you know, putting the title on you. Jacob's not a young guy though; he's been around a long time. He's really fucking good.
Yeah, like, but it's storyline stuff. I mean, like, they don't care who's got the title, because Roman can win. It's like always, man. The champ can win it back.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they got to do something with him. They put a lot of heat on him tonight. So, and Saturday night. But, all right, JD, I think that's going to do it for us. I got it, dude. I got to get to sleep. So,
yeah, sleep. I go too.
All right, guys. Thanks to everybody in the chat. I appreciate everybody. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rains on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.